This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Our next speaker is Ryo Hiroshi, and he'll be discussing a topic that has for a long time been mired with controversy, and there have been many attempts to alter it. And we hope to see maybe a new allocation system on the horizon. So his topic is optimizing the match between deceased donors and recipients, a new organ allocation on the horizon. Rio?
Thanks, Flavio, and good afternoon. Thanks for staying for the afternoon session. I know there's nothing you'd rather be doing than to be inside when it's 80 degrees out and sunny in Napa. There's certainly nothing more that I would like to be doing than discussing organ allocation. But this is a subject that's interesting to all of us that are involved in transplantation in general, and those specifically interested in helping to figure out where the next kidney should go and how we should allocate things. And truth be told, I would disclose that I'm probably not the best surgeon to be talking about this. Peter Stock probably is, because he was the chair of the Kidney Allocation Committee for UNOS. And since he's not here to defend himself, I'll say they didn't really get much done while he was president. But that was not necessarily his fault, in that there's many different interests that are competing to get the next kidney and to figure out what the right methodology would be to allocate kidneys. So what is allocation? The definition of allocation is a distribution according to a plan, and distribution to serve a specific purpose. And I would argue our current allocation does neither. There is neither a plan nor a purpose to our allocation system, except that it is essentially a first-come, first-serve list. It's a queue. So if you get into line at a cafeteria or on a bus, you get in line and you get served when your turn comes up. Now, that doesn't seem like it serves any other purpose, except maybe to give a sense of fairness, first-come, first-serve. And the question is that the way we should be doing it? I think the answer probably is no. And so the allocation of donor kidneys always involves balancing and weighting differently, sometimes opposing interests. And the factors to balance, and other authors have used this sort of diagram, is justice, utility, and efficiency. And if you think about what the factors, these factors are, they're often polar opposites to each other. If you have limit access to certain people, is that just or fair versus having the best outcomes overall for every kidney that comes out? So you really have to think about how you balance these things when you develop the next allocation system. So what do other organs, how do other organs get distributed? In general, there's a sickest first policy for several of the other organs that are being allocated for transplant. In heart transplant, the ranking of the patients that come up with the next organ are essentially sickest first in concentric circles, geographic circles, so status 1A patients on mechanical assist devices and VADs are first, and in the ICU on pressors, et cetera, and they go down in terms of how sick they are. In lung transplantation, there's a lung allocation score which factors in two things. One is how sick they are, that is, their survival without a transplant, but also they take into account post-transplant survival. So the ratio between the two really allocates the patients who maximally benefit from getting a transplant. Whereas in liver transplant, we don't really look at post-transplant outcomes, but again, a sickest-first policy. Status 1 patients with acute liver failure that are about to die in 7 days, then the next patients down the list, chronic liver disease with the highest MELD score, which all of you know that are involved in calculating MELD scores, the bilirubin, INR, and creatinine are involved in calculating the MELD score, and one goes down the list, et cetera. But how are kidneys allocated? Well, the first issue is that everywhere in the country allocates their kidneys a little bit differently. But no matter what system you're talking about, waiting time is probably the most important determinant of where you are on the list. It's based on points, and 1 year of waiting time is 1 point. And HLA matching does garner some points, and patients with that are highly sensitized with a CPRA greater than 80 are awarded 4 points automatically, 4 years. There is a separate category, obviously, called ECD kidneys that requires patients to be pre-consented. The recipients have to be pre-consented to receive these, quote-unquote, suboptimal kidneys. But otherwise, it's really a first-come, first-serve sort of system. Now, when we look at justice and fairness, does that mean that we need to provide equal access to all patients to transplant? Or should all candidates have access to all the possible kidneys? All candidates fitting a profile should have equal access. What is equal access? And is a first come, first serve allocation system really a fair system or just? There are highly sensitized patients that may have less access to transplant simply because of the biological issue of antibodies. We know they have worse outcomes, but they're given 4 points, 4 years of waiting time, so they get exposed to more donors. And if you have a PRA greater than 7, greater than 20, you have access to zero antigen mismatch kidneys throughout the country. And so we have to think about how we're going to develop access to transplant and yet serve the utility of maximizing the total life years added. And that's a concept that was used to propose a different allocation system, but was shot down in essence because of a few things. One, it was a very complex system. Although in concept it seems logical that we want to try to maximize the total life years added as a system. Or should we just simply transplant as many candidates as possible, quote-unquote saving as many lives as possible, not necessarily the number of life years you added? One thing I think we would all agree on is to avoid wasteful transplants, patients that are not going to do well with transplant. And the problem is that we have many older folks on the list now, and the kidneys that we use sometimes in these older folks have a potential to last many more decades than the patients themselves would last. And so should we transplant those younger patients, younger kidneys, into patients with short lifespans, whether they get transplanted or not? Death with a functioning graft is, in fact, a major cause of graft loss. And one way of figuring out whether we're doing the right thing is trying to match the lifespan of the kidneys to the lifespan of the recipients that are actually receiving them. It doesn't make sense, really, to transplant a 70-year-old with an 18-year-old kidney that has many decades of life left after the patient passes away. What about the conflicting interest of efficiency? Again, should we transplant as many patients as possible as quickly as possible? One of the problems is, patient placing kidneys locally would be very efficient, but really not fair. This is what we do to a certain extent, and it results in geographic disparity, major geographic disparities in waiting times across the country and across our DSAs. Should we concentrate on cost-effective transplants? Our budget is not limitless, and should we think about cost-effectiveness of the allocation system, of the new systems that we think about? Now, what are some of the other problems with our current allocation system? Right now, we have sometimes poor matching of recipient and graft longevity. Again, younger patients needing retransplant if they get not the best transplant kidneys available, and they need retransplants younger. And again, older patients die long before expected longevity of their graft. There is, in fact, geographic disparities. Even in the local area, there are patients in, for example, the Sacramento area or in the Pacific Northwest that have a lower waiting time than patients here in San Francisco or in the Bay Area. There also is a significantly high rate of discards of potentially usable organs that could continue to extend lives. Right now, there's not enough incentive to use every usable kidney. And right now, there's only two kinds of kidneys that we think about, SCDs and ECDs, the standard criteria donor, extended criteria donor. There's significant overlap between the SCD and ECD kidney survival. And certainly, I'll show later on that some SCDs are certainly a lot worse than some of our ECD kidneys. So this is not a good system in terms of sorting out the good kidneys from the suboptimal kidneys. So the objectives of the Kidney Allocation Committee in terms of revising the allocation system is to improve matching of recipient and graft longevity, to increase efficiency, utility of use of all transplantable kidneys, and to reduce discards, as well as to try to reduce some of the other disparities, including sensitized patients, racial and ethnic minorities, and perhaps some pediatric patients that need access to these transplants as well. To reach this objective, the UNOS Kidney Committee has used a kidney donor profile index, and I'm going to get into what that actually is, but it's based on the risk of graft loss and assigns a percentile to a kidney that reflects how good that kidney is, a particular kidney compared to other donor kidneys. And the plan was, in 80% of cases, was to prioritize kidneys to be around the age of the donor. So in other words, that the kidney donor would be offered to someone within 15 years of that of recipients of that donor age. This actually proposal was blocked, citing age discrimination. And so the kidney committee had to go back again and think about other markers of longevity, such as estimated potential post-transplant survival, which in a good measure is measured by the age, but used other things other than just the age to come up with these 80% of these cases. And the other concept was to assign the best 20% of the kidneys to the best 20% of the candidates. That is, those candidates have had the longest predicted low post-transplant survival. This next graph is a graph I think requires a lot of study and looking at, and to make sure that we talk about that we all start on the same page. If you look at the U.S. population in terms of expected lifetimes and compared to the dialysis patients in red, there's no doubt that transplantation in green adds a number of years, even to our older patients. It's also quite clear that you gain the most number of years by transplanting the younger folks. And that makes sense. Towards the end of that graft, you end up adding at most a year of life with a transplant recipient that's in their 70s or 75 or older. However, it's not just the quantity of life that you add, it's the quality of life. And so we have to think about how we're going to figure out where we're going to put the next kidney to maximize the utility of that kidney and to make sure that that kidney goes into the right recipient. So there's no question that younger patients lose the most years from ESRD. If you look at that graph again, there's the biggest disparity between the normal population and dialysis patients in the younger patients. They also gain the most from transplant. And older patients are much more likely to die on the waiting list unless transplanted early. And the older patients do benefit, but they benefit in fewer number of years added and gain the least from transplantation. So right now, extended criteria donors that are defined as donors either greater than 60 years of age or greater than 50 to 59 with two of the three things, either history of hypertension, CVA as a cause of death, and terminal creatinine greater than 1.5. What is the benefit of using these? Well, if you look at the ideal donor recipient and the marginal donor recipient and look at their increased risk or decreased risk of death compared to remaining on dialysis, this flat line here is the reference, the waitlisted dialysis patient. You reach a equal risk of dying at about 122 days for the ideal kidney and 185 days for the marginal kidney. You get to equal survival a little later on, 256 days and 531 days for the marginal kidney. So they basically you have to get out to a year or a year and a half to look at to get equal survival, to get the increased risk of surgery to be worth it compared to the dialysis patient. Now, what about receiving an ECD versus SCD? Now, these are survival curves, again, of the general population to those without transplant. With an SCD, there's no doubt that you get a nice increase in your survival from without transplant up here. But you also, with an ECD transplant, get increased survival with these suboptimal kidneys. Donor age is certainly a big factor in figuring out exactly how much your kidney will survive. This is death censored graft survival and donor age. And at 1 year post-transplant, 5 years post-transplant, and 10 years post-transplant, you see how the older kidneys are certainly show a decrease in survival. But as opposed to using SCD, the Kidney Donor Risk Index was developed by authors that uses not just those three factors, but 13 factors, 10 that are donor specific that you can figure out before the donor operation and transplant happens, but three require transplant data. And this KDRI, or Kidney Donor Risk Index, described the relative risk of graft failure compared to an ideal donor. Their reference donor was actually a healthy 40-year-old donor. So a KDRI of less than one is better than that donor, and a KDRI greater than one is worse. And the healthy 40-year-old donor assumed a non-African-American, serum creatinine of one, normotensive, non-diabetic, a cause of death other than CVA, for example, trauma, and that were brain dead, not DCD and HCV negative. So the factors that are found to be independently caused associated with graft failure death include these factors: donor age, history of hypertension, CVA as a cause of death, height, weight, DCD, terminal creatinine, history of diabetes, race, HCV status, and the three things that can't be determined until you really determine who the recipient is HLA-B and DR match, double or on-block transplant, and cold ischemia time. The KDRI, therefore, reflects the rate of graft failure relative to that healthy 40-year-old donor that I described. Now, if you look at KDRI, graft survival by KDRI, and look at the fairly disparate groups, the worst kidneys that have a KDRI greater than 2.3 enjoy a much worse survival than those that are less than 1.31. But you can see there's a gradation based on the KDRI, and that donors greater than with a KDRI greater than 2.33 had a 5-year survival of 53% versus 77% and 73% in the two best groups for the KDRI. The point I wanted to make about SCDs and ECDs, however, and KDRI is if you look at the DRI categories and the SCDs as these are the percentage of donors that fall into each of those groups, you can see that the black bars, which are the SCDs, do often have a DRI that's relatively high. Here's 2.3 and above. That's the worst definition of the DRI, whereas some of the ECDs in white are clearly better than those standard criteria donors. So in the donors of the worst DRI group, 34% of them did not meet ECD criteria. In other words, they were defined as SCDs. So an SCD is not an SCD, and an ECD is not an ECD based on the KDRI, which uses more than just those three factors to determine whether you're a suboptimal kidney or not. And it's a continuous gradient. It's not a black and white. It's not a binary outcome, SCD versus ECD. You can sort of grade these kidneys. And so, again, many SCDs have high KDRIs. Many ECDs have lower KDRIs than SCDs. And so UNOS has decided to look at KDRI and an associated profile that uses 10 of the available factors at the time of organ offer. You don't have the HLA matching for every recipient. You don't have the cold ischemia time, obviously. But you do have these 10 factors that are each shown to be independently associated with graft survival. And so to map what's called the Kidney Donor Profile Index to the KDRI, the KDPI is now a percentile. And the higher the percentile, the worse the kidney. For example, a kidney with a KDPI of 85% means that 85% of the kidneys are a better risk than that kidney that's coming on board for an organ offer. So the donor kidney has a higher DRI than 85% of the kidneys in the donor pool. And the KDPI, obviously you don't have a recipient, but assumes that the donor kidney is going to an average recipient. And if you look at how the KDPI maps to KDRI, so this is KDPI versus KDRI, and then you look at estimated graft survival for 1, 3, and 5 years, you can see there's a significant drop-off once you get to a KDRI, certainly above 2.3, but if you look at 95 to 99% KDPI, that you're in the worst 99% of the kidneys. Again, this is by KDRI, but you'll see this drop-off as you estimated graft survival that are 1 year and 2 years, that drops off significantly at the 95% level. So now how is the kidney donor pool distributed among KDPI and KDRI? If you look at the relative risk of graft failure and the percentile among donor kidneys, the higher 20%, the best 20% of the kidneys fall in this sort of category. And if you look at the distribution of estimated median post-transplant survival, these are the best recipients. So the thought was to, in the new allocation system, to first get a donor kidney, estimate the longevity of that donor kidney. then divide that candidate pool into broad groups, and then rank order the candidates within that group. So the proposal right now in terms of how good a kidney is and how good it isn't, currently we only distinguish between SCD and ECDs. The proposal is that the best kidneys, the KDPI less than 20%, go to patients that have the 20% best patients with best estimated post-transplant survival. That those kidneys between 20 and 80 to 85% go to a standard group that is sort of the middle group of patients, and those KDPI donor kidneys that are in the 80 to 85% or higher be assigned to patients that we would normally consent for ECD patients. So this would, of course, hopefully distribute the best kidneys, the kidneys to the most appropriate candidates, that the best 20% of kidneys went to the best 20% of candidates in terms of longevity, that the kidneys with KDPIs that are sort of the standard kidney to group B candidates, that is the second best sort of candidates, and the kidneys with KDPIs greater than 85% be patients that are specifically consented for what we would now be considering ECD-type kidneys. So who should receive these extended criteria donors? Well, if you look at the wait list and how patients will die on the wait list, if you look at who benefits most from getting an ECD kidney, there's been several studies that looked at identifying the best recipients for these kidneys. Any candidate over the age of 60, or diabetic candidates actually over the age of 40, those with failing vascular access, and any candidate whose expected waiting time exceeds their life expectancy. So if you can shave a number of years off their waiting time, getting this sort of less optimal kidney is better than just staying on the list and potentially dying on the list. Another study looked at whether you should really, is it better to accept a marginal kidney exchange for a shorter time on dialysis? And this analysis showed that older and frailer patients benefit from receiving ECD kidneys shortly after their diagnosis of ESRD, whereas younger and healthier patients benefit from waiting, that is, waiting for a better kidney. And also, Bob Marion's group looked at mortality after receiving an ECD versus dialysis and then a subsequent standard criteria donor kidney. And that their conclusion was ECD kidneys should be offered primarily to patients that are occurring in OPOs with long waiting times. They define long waiting time as greater than 4 years. Of course, you all know that our blood type O patients wait 8 years or sometimes even longer. But in OPOs with short waiting times, these ECD kidneys probably only ought to be offered to diabetics. Now, what happens when you put older donor kidneys into older recipients? It's quite clear that even the older living donor is better than having a standard criteria cadaveric donor. So I just ended up, I transplanted a 71-year-old with a 70-year-old, his wife's kidney, and that survival is far better than getting a standard criteria donor. Although an ECD-type kidney, you get less survival with that. So, you know, the bottom line is you should certainly still continue to encourage living donation from older folks into older folks. The other thing that we have to consider is to try to avoid unintended consequences with a new allocation system. Prioritizing certain populations may disincentivize living donation. So in the new system, no one should really go to the top of the list. This sort of happened, we think, in pediatrics. The pediatric recipients have priority already for younger donors. They receive a lot of points, and they have access to the best kidneys without a long waiting time. And it turns out that living donor transplant for pediatric recipients seems to be going down. So we definitely want to avoid these unintended consequences of decreasing living donation by incentivizing prioritizing patients too much to the top of the list. But to prevent disincentivizing living donors, again, no one should probably automatically just go to the top of the list, except maybe for those small numbers of patients with emergency listing with no access whatsoever for dialysis. And that receiving the best organ will likely mean or should likely mean waiting longer, perhaps. But the best organs should go into the best candidates with best survival post-transplant, and receiving a suboptimal donor should result in a shorter waiting time. And that's particularly important, again, for those with a short lifespan on the waiting list. So the bottom line is, you know, we just don't have enough kidneys to go around despite massive efforts. Many collaboration efforts, et cetera, have gone on with organ procurement agencies. And despite all these federal efforts, the number of transplant organs that are becoming available is still not continuing to increase, even though there was a small bump when these collaboratives actually increased. Is it really rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic? It actually isn't. The ship is certainly sinking for many people, but some will certainly die faster than others. The older folks need the lifeboat much quicker, and the younger folks can probably swim a little longer. But the best lifeboats, which are going to last the longest, should probably go to the ones most equipped to survive in the long term. And so instead of using age, because interest groups really objected to the notion that we're using just age to estimate post-transplant survival, there will be other factors such as diabetes, length of dialysis, which will unfortunately disadvantage those folks that have had a long dialysis period, and certainly some patients with prior transplants don't have as high an estimated post-transplant survival. The other major disparity that isn't being addressed, unfortunately, by the Kidney Committee at this time is the huge geographic disparity in access to transplant and the difference in wait times throughout the country. That'll require much more sort of politically charged changes in terms of the unit of distribution of these organs to go away from donor service areas and to involve much larger regions. I think that's a sort of more difficult goal for the Kidney Allocation Committee to tackle, but I think is the big elephant in the room that we do need to tackle as a national organization. So I hope that gives you a sense of where the Kidney Committee is going at this point, and I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you. Yes. That's a very good question. The question is, there's data on 20 and 30-year-olds receiving ECD kidneys. Now, every center can decide who they would put an ECD kidney into. There's no specific policy that says you cannot put an ECD kidney into a specific patient. We at our transplant center have obviously taken the tack that these should be older folks or folks that are not going to do well on dialysis and will do better by receiving a suboptimal kidney offer. Having said that, the policy is such that you only need to make sure that they have been pre-consented and have informed consent to receive some of these ECD kidneys. Now, as I showed, I think, in the graph, some of those 51-year-olds that fit into ECD criteria are better than many of the standard criteria donors that we would accept in terms of their KDRI. So it's not to say that no ECD kidney should ever go into a fairly relatively healthy person. And I think the point I was trying to make is that the KDRI is one effort to try to make that, since it's a continuous gradient and not just a binary, almost inaccurate way of characterizing some of these donors, although in the general population sense, those ECD kidneys do have a higher risk of graft survival than the SCDs in general, that I think we are all steering away from this SCD versus ECD type dichotomy because of the inaccuracy in that categorization. Yes. Well, that's something that we set internally. I'm sorry. The question is that certain people in our program are excluded from access to ECD kidneys, including those with a high BMI, in fact, those that are perhaps sensitized. And those are criteria that each transplant center can determine for themselves who they would want to list for an ECD transplant. You could argue that we should let heavier patients and patients with large body masses and large BMIs have access to these kidney transplants. you know, our thought is that the nephron mass for these kidneys are probably lower than what we would consider our standard criteria donor. So we have picked patients that don't necessarily need as much of a nephron mass, but you could argue that the BMI cutoff is not a particularly good one for patients that weigh 200 pounds and are older and will probably die on our waiting list. So, you know, this it's always a matter of discussion in our sometimes lively selection conferences between surgeons and nephrologists as to who should get these kidneys. You know, the argument for sensitized patients, for example, is that the data suggests that the sensitized patients don't benefit from having an ECD-type transplant. They suffer much more from graft loss and have poor outcomes. So, you know, you don't obviously want to push it to the point where they're having such bad outcomes that they're not benefiting at all by doing the transplant. So if you push the envelope too much, you'll be putting in transplant grafts that don't last or don't work at all. And, you know, these relative risks of graft loss within the first year are relatively high at 2 or 3 times the normal one. So at some point, you have to decide what relative risk you're willing to take in taking these suboptimal organs and exposing your patient to a 2x higher risk of graft loss for the promise or chance that you could end up having it work out and get them off dialysis quicker and get them a transplant before they die on our waiting list. The sobering thought is that in this country, if you're 60 years old or greater and you get put on the list, you have at least a 50-50 chance of dying on the wait list before you have access to any kidney. That's national data. So half the patients we list greater than 60 years are going to die before they get their kidney transplant. So it's sobering to think about that since we list so many patients over 60. Yes.
When your team or any center's team hear about the kidney, the donor.
Yes.
Who gets to hear what all the details were about that donor and how does that match to the recipient that's going to get it in terms of how well they'll tolerate the CCD when they have the complications?
So that's a very good question. It varies from center to center. And it varies in extremes from the transplant surgeon in our center hears about the donor offer versus in some centers a transplant nephrologist on call decides who's getting this kidney and the transplant surgeon just shows up and sews the kidney in. So it does vary from center to center. At UCSF, the transplant surgeon on call hears the donor offer and hears all of the gory details about how the patient died, what their medical history was, what their social history was, what their KDPI is. The KDPI comes up right on the donor unit, so we have a number. Although, you know, one can still argue the accuracy of that number for individual donors, certainly as a population, is a fairly accurate number. So those details go to the transplant surgeon on call. We then get an offer for a specific patient, and that patient is whoever's on the top of the list by the number of points that we have. In this day and age, it's still driven largely by waiting time, and in our OPO, it's almost all by waiting time. So we get the offer, we get a specific donor-specific recipient, and then we go over the details with the transplant coordinator deciding whether this kidney is an appropriate one for the first recipient on the list. Just out of curiosity, if I get an 18-year-old kidney offer that comes to my cell phone and the first patient up is a 72-year-old recipient that's waited 8 years with coronary disease, how many in this room say I should take that kidney for that patient? 18-year-old kidney going into a 72-year-old coronary disease. So would anyone accept that? So the problem is I think I have to accept it. I mean, why? What would be my reason to turn that kidney down for that? The problem is that we have an agreement with that patient to serve that. So I think the allocation system has to change so I shouldn't be able to take that kidney. And the problem is that just because I know that there's a 25-year-old on the list right behind that patient that I could accept it for, if it's at my transplant center, I would think about turning it down for the 72-year-old. But actually, I'm not so sure that's the ethical thing to do. It may be the ethical thing to do for the entire list, but I'm also representing that individual patient. Now, if I get a 70-year-old kidney for an 18-year-old donor, 18-year-old recipient, I'd turn it down, of course, right away. But you know, that kid, or a 53-year-old, or even not someone that meets specifically ECD criteria for that 18-year-old, you know, I'm going to wait for that 18-year-old to get a better kidney for that 18-year-old. But so I think this is part of the reason why the allocation system needs to change. Yeah. The question is, are patients entitled to know the KDPI of the kidney that's being offered? It's a very good question. The KDPI is also not a particularly infallible number. Although, in large populations, there's a huge difference between a KDPI of 99% and 20%, but between 20 and 80%, I'm not so sure that that serves a good purpose. And, you know, I could say that on the one hand, they deserve that as part of informed consent. But on the other hand, it doesn't mean that the next kidney that's being offered with a slightly lower KDPI is a better kidney for that patient. So I hesitate a little bit in giving TMI sometimes to the recipients that may or may not be in a position to make that determination. I'll give you an example. There are patients that say, I don't want a kidney that has less than 5 antigen matches or less than 3 antigens matched. So they wait around for that kidney. They end up getting a 51-year-old kidney where they turn down a lot of 30-year-old kidneys. So, you know, sometimes it doesn't make sense to have that information given if they don't know what to do with that. Yeah, for the worst ECD patients, yes, we are allowed to put in 2 kidneys. They often get offered singles first, and if no center is interested in using singles, the question was whether we're still allowed to take 2 kidneys. But we are in certain type of ECD kidneys, the worst ECD kidneys that we have. So we get the organ offer, and if we have questions about the organ donor, we can log into DonorNet and get whatever information we have. But at that moment, you have about an hour to figure out whether you're going to accept it or not for that particular recipient. Otherwise, it goes to the next recipient. Yeah. I would say absolutely yes. The question is whether you should encourage older spouses, older folks to donate. And if they're healthy and willing donors, I would say absolutely yes. It precludes the waiting time. It'll get them off dialysis quicker. And if they're healthy, and it results in a much longer graft survival as well, even compared to SED donors. So I would say absolutely yes. One of the major components of graft survival and what determines how well they do is the length of time they spend on dialysis. So if there's ways to shorten that with a living donor, I would say absolutely yes. We don't have an age limit. I don't know what our record is. Steve? 77-year-old donor. And that particular transplant did well, I think.
The recipient died at the age of 93 with a functional graft. So his wife is still alive at the age of 98.
So that's only one case, but there's many sort of 70-year-old couples that have donated one spouse to the other, usually the wife to the husband.
She signed her donor card. She said if she dies, she wants a kidney.
Okay. Yes? The limit is the technical aspect of doing a nephrectomy on a scarred area. You know, once these kidneys are pretty scarred in, it's technically difficult, and they've seen years and years of CNI in a patient. So, you know, I think it's hard-pressed to think about, unless it's a perfectly young kidney that, you know, somehow got lost very early, to think about taking a kidney that's been previously transplanted and using it again in transplant. Yeah. That's right. You have cardiovascular. Right, that as well. There are some unique instances where actually they have been used again, but usually very unique. All right, thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.